Chapter 8. Elvis's big feet crunched on the hard ground. The night had grown bitterly cold, and every once in a while Sabrina spotted a snowflake floating toward the ground. She was freezing, even in her heavy coat. If Wendell was still alive out in the woods without his, it would be a miracle. Elvis sniffed the air. Once the big dog caught a scent, he never lost it. When he reached the edge of the trees, he stopped and barked impatiently at the family. It was obvious they were slowing him down. "Oh, I wish I could bottle his energy," Granny Relda said, taking Sabrina's arm in order to help herself across the school's icy lawn. "I'd be a rich old lady." When they finally reached Elvis, he led them into the woods. He sniffed wildly, rushing back and forth along a path, following the scent, but managing to stick close to the family, as if he knew the old woman would have a difficult time keeping up with his pace. Sabrina heard a branch snap in the distance and saw the dog's keen ears perk up. She expected him to run off howling in the direction of the sound, but instead, he continued to follow his invisible path. It seemed as if they had been searching for hours, and Sabrina's toes were getting numb. Puck complained and suggested that they give up several times, insisting that Wendell's rabbit army had probably turned on him and were now feasting on his chubby body. Sabrina was also ready to give up when they came to a small clearing and a sight so incredible, even Granny Relda gasped. On the ground at their feet was a mound of fur, nearly 4 feet high and 6 feet wide. At first, Sabrina thought it might be a small bear, but as they got closer, they realized it wasn't a single animal, but a group of many. In fact, it was a pile of rabbits huddling together in the cold. Elvis growled at the pile, but if the little forest animals noticed, they chose to ignore him. "I told you," Puck cried. "His woodland army mutinied. I hope he was delicious, little rodents." The old woman stepped close to the pile and leaned down. "Wendell!" The mound stirred for a moment, but then became totally still. "Wendell, your father is worried thick about you," Granny Relda scolded. "Now come out of there this instant."
"No," a voice shouted from the depths of the rabbits. "You're going to take me to jail. I won't go."
"No one is taking you to jail, Wendell," Granny said. "All we want to do is take you home."
The mound stirred and shivered. A brief note from the boy's harmonica was heard, and suddenly the rabbits rushed off in different directions.
"Run, you dirty little carrot munchers!" Puck shouted after them. "But know today that your kind has made an enemy of the Trickster King."
When they were all gone, Wendell lay at the family's feet. Granny stepped forward, helped the boy up, and got him into his coat.
"I didn't do it," he insisted.
"Then why did you run?" Sabrina asked.
"And send rabbits to eat us. I'm a 7-year-old girl," Daphne said. "Do you know how important bunny rabbits are to me?"
"I didn't think you'd believe me. I knew how it looked, but I was trying to stop them," the boy pleaded. "If I had gotten in trouble, it would have ruined all my work so far."
He shoved his hand into his coat pocket and pulled out a business card. He handed it to Granny. The old woman read it, looked impressed, and nodded at him. Sabrina took the card and read it closely. It said, "Wendell Emery Hamlin, Private Investigator." At the bottom of the card was a magnifying glass with a huge eye inside it.
"So, you're a detective," Granny Relda said with a smile.
Daphne snatched the card and studied it.
"I want a business card, too."
"Something terrible is happening inside the school," Wendell said. "I'm trying to find whoever's responsible and stop them."
"We know. Why don't you tell us everything on the way back to the school?"
the old woman said.
"Your father is there waiting for you."
The group trudged back through the forest, and Wendell told them all he had learned.
"I was leaving the school yesterday when I looked back and saw something happen in Mr. Grumpner's room," he said, stopping to blow his nose into his handkerchief. "Sorry, I've got really bad allergies."
"It's okay, go on," Granny Relda replied.
"Like I was saying, Grumpner fell backward over some desks, and at first I thought he might be sick, but then a monster attacked him. I was kind of far away, so I couldn't really see, but it looked like a giant spider, They grabbed Grumpner and started covering him in its sticky web. Well, I remembered from science class that birds are a spider's natural predator.
What's a predator? Daphne asked. It's like a hunter, Sabrina replied.
So I got out a harmonica I'd bought and blew into it as hard as I could, the boy continued. I didn't even know if it would work. Dad told me to never do it. He said musical instruments were off limits on account of his past. Please don't tell him I bought the harmonica. He'll get real mad.
Granny took his hand.
Don't worry, Wendell.
He relaxed and continued.
So I just thought of birds, and before I knew it, the sky was full of them. They were looking at me like I was their leader or something, and it took me a while to realize they were looking for instructions. So I pointed at the window and said, "Save Mr. Grumpner."
How come you remember Mr. Grumpner? Sabrina asked. The rest of our class doesn't.
My dad had a protection spell put on our house. Whenever they dust the town, we aren't affected. So anyway, the birds went straight for the window and smashed it. They flew in and attacked the monster. Unfortunately, it was too late. Even from out in the yard, I could see the spider had already eaten him.
That explains the feathers, Daphne said. And what about the janitor? Sabrina asked, still not sure she believed the strange boy's story.
Ms. Spangler gave me a detention for refusing to play dodgeball, Wendell said. I mean, we know how to play the game. Let's move on already. So when I walked in, there was this ugly, hairy thing fighting with Mrs. Hart and Ms. White. At first, I thought it was a bear, but it moved way too fast, and it had these weird yellow eyes. Mrs. Hart was pretty useless against it. She hid behind a desk and screamed while Ms. White fought the thing. I got my harmonica out, wondering if I could control it, too. And at first it seemed to work, but it ran to the window, opened it, and leaped outside. When you guys saw me, I wasn't running away. I was trying to catch it.
You're quite brave, Wendell, Granny Relda said.
My line of work isn't for the faint of heart, he declared, wiping his nose on his handkerchief.
We've also had a run-in with an unusual creature, the old woman said.
I know this is going to sound crazy, but I don't think these creatures are monsters. I think they're the children of ever-afters.
That's an excellent deduction, said Granny Relda. You've got some makings of a great detective.
The boy smiled. The only thing I wasn't sure about was why the attacks were taking place in the first place. That is, until I found the tunnels.
Tunnels? Sabrina and Daphne cried.
Yes, someone is digging under the school. They start in the boiler room and go on for a long time. I'm sure it's all connected. The tunnels, the giant spider, hairy things. I just don't know how.
Perhaps we should team up, Granny Relda said. Combining our efforts might solve the case sooner.
Sorry, lady, I work alone, Wendell said as they reached the front door of the school. Detective work is dangerous business. I don't want any dames getting in the way.
Sabrina rolled her eyes. Someone's been watching too many detective movies, all right, she thought.
I understand, Granny said, trying her best to sound disappointed, just as Mr. Hamlin came running down the hallway. He swooped his boy up in his arms and hugged him.
Do you know how worried your mother and I have been?
His father said, half lecturing and half laughing.
I'm sorry, Dad, the boy said, but there's a caper afoot, and I'm in the thick of it.
Thank you, Relda, Mr. Hamlin said, reaching over and kissing the old woman on the cheek. Thank you all.
Daphne tugged on her pants and stepped forward, mimicking the sheriff's funny little bow-legged walk.
Just doing my job, citizen, she said.
You're welcome, Sabrina added.
I've heard stories that you have a harmonica, young man, the principal said, reaching his hand out to the boy.
Wendell frowned. But I need it, he argued. It helps with my detective work.
You're about to retire, his father said sternly. Until these monsters are caught, your days as a detective are over.
Wendell reached into his pocket and pulled out his shiny harmonica. He reluctantly handed it to his father and grimaced when Hamlin stuffed it into his pants pocket.
Mr. Hamlin, before we go, I was wondering something, Sabrina said. Are there any more children here at the school like Wendell?
What do you mean? The principal asked.
You know, children of ever-afters.
He's the only one I know of.
Anyone else on the staff?
Only Ms. White, myself, and now Mrs. Hart, Hamlin said. About 10 years ago, Ms. Muffet, the Beast, and the Frog Prince were all on staff, but they went in on a lottery ticket and won millions of dollars and quit. I was happy for them, but it was a real shame. Good teachers are hard to find.
Anyone else?
I'm not sure, Hamlin said. They don't really come with tags. I suppose there might be a couple, but I wouldn't know.
Of course, Granny Relda said. She looked at Sabrina, and the girl saw a sparkle in her eye, the kind her grandmother got when she found an important clue.
Is there a phone I could use?
The principal gestured toward his door. There's one in the secretary's office.
Thank you, Granny said, slipping out the door. Children, I'll be right back.
The group stared at one another in awkward silence. At last, Puck spoke.
So, Piper, how many rats were there? He asked, referring to the man's famous adventure.
Thousands, the principal replied.
That's gross, Daphne groaned.
Granny returned to the room and smiled.
Well, we have to be going now, she said, turning to Wendell. Try to stay out of trouble.
Trouble would be wise to stay out of my way, the boy said, sounding like a movie detective.
As the family walked back down the hall, they passed the boiler room.
We should check the tunnels now while no one is here, Sabrina suggested,
walking over to the boiler room door and trying the knob. It was locked.
No. If people are being killed to protect what's in them, I suggest we take the hint for now,
Granny Relda replied.
At least until we find out who these murderers are. In the meantime, I think I know the parents of our killers. Let's have a chat with them.
A skinny Christmas tree sat at the entrance to the police station. It was hung with a few strands of tinsel and had a garland wrapped sloppily around it. A couple of boxes of shiny bulbs sat underneath it, waiting to be strung on the tree's limbs. As they passed the display, Sabrina finally realized how overworked the sheriff was. He didn't even have time to finish his holiday decorations. Sheriff Hampstead was at the front desk, surrounded by six of the most unusual people Sabrina had ever seen. She recognized two of them immediately. Beauty and the Beast weren't a couple she would soon forget. The dazzlingly gorgeous Beauty was a complete contrast to her husband, the fur-covered, fang-faced Beast. As for the others in the room, there was a pretty blonde woman in a tiara and satiny blue gown standing next to a tall, strong man with enormous green eyes and an odd, scaly skin disorder. The Frog Prince, Sabrina realized. Next to them was a chubby woman covered in jewels, Little Miss Muffet, holding hands, or in this case, holding the leg, of an enormous black spider nearly the size of Elvis. All six of them were complaining and shouting at the sheriff.
"What's the meaning of this, Hampstead?"
the Beast growled.
"We had dinner reservations at old King Cole's," Beauty cried. "Do you know how long it takes to get a table at Christmas time? We called in September."
The Frog Prince's bride was as angry as anyone.
"Drag me out of my home in the middle of the night," she huffed. "We're royalty."
"It's beyond rude," the scaly Frog Prince complained.
The spider clicked angrily with its gigantic pincers.
"Settle down, everyone," the sheriff shouted as he stood up. "Relda Grimm will explain everything."
"What?
Since when does Relda Grimm run the police force?" Little Miss Muffet demanded. Her spider companion clicked and hissed in protest.
"The mayor has asked my family to help with the investigation of the two murders at Ferryport Landing Elementary," Granny replied.
Little Miss Muffet stepped forward.
"What's that got to do with us?" she asked.
"Miss Muffet, it has everything to do with you," the old woman replied, "and your children."
The crowd gasped and averted their eyes.
"Relda Grimm, you've lost your mind," the Beast declared. "None of us have children."
"That's what I thought," Granny Relda said, "until my granddaughter asked a question that I should have asked myself. Who else worked at Fairyport Landing Elementary? I had nearly forgotten that you, the Frog Prince, and Little Miss Muffet were all teachers there before the three of you won the lottery.
Sabrina beamed with pride.
Granny may have disapproved of Sabrina's suspicions about the ever-afters, but it was those same suspicions that were helping solve the mystery.
We won the lottery more than 10 years ago, Miss Muffet said.
And I go by Mrs. Arachnid now.
So we worked at the school. What does that have to do with the murder? The Frog Prince asked.
It's your retirement that interests me. Let me explain. Witnesses say there have been attacks by 2 so-called monsters on school grounds, Granny said, crossing the room and stopping in front of the Frog Prince and Princess. And my family and I were victims of a 3rd attack during our investigation. This one involved a half-girl, half-frog creature. Luckily, no one was hurt. The couple lowered their eyes, and Granny moved on to Muffet, also known as Mrs. Arachnid, and her spider. Unfortunately, I can't say the same for Mr. Grumpner. He was killed by what we suspect was a giant spider. The spider clicked angrily, but his wife was still. Granny moved on to Beauty and the Beast. Charlie, the school janitor, also met an untimely demise by a creature described as a hairy, man-eating beast with yellow eyes, Granny said.
You can't prove those are our children, Beauty cried.
You're right, but there is one thing that we can prove, Sheriff Hampstead interjected. None of you ever won the lottery.
Everyone gasped, even Puck.
I called the State Lottery Commission, the sheriff continued. They have records of every lottery winner in the last 100 years. None of you are on their lists.
Where did you get the money? Granny asked.
Are you suggesting we sold our children? The beast growled.
I think you know I am, Granny Relda answered.
And so am I, Hampstead added.
He reached into his pocket and took out a pair of handcuffs.
I also think you are going to be arrested unless someone starts talking.
We were nearly broke when we found out I was pregnant, the Frog Princess said. All of our money was gone. We were worried we'd lose our house. If you go broke in Fairyport Landing, you stay that way. There's no one to bail you out. You can't move to another town. We would have been beggars in the street.
Beauty broke down in tears as well.
We were in the same predicament, barely making ends meet on Beast's teacher's salary. It was no way to raise a child. He told us he could help. One night, he brought over a spinning wheel and started spinning gold. By morning, we had enough to last us 12 lifetimes. We sold it to a precious metals merchant from New York City. We were rich overnight.
Who did this? Said Granny Relda.
Rumpelstiltskin, the Frog Princess cried.
The Frog Prince took her hand and begged her to be silent, but the tears and truth were already pouring out of her.
We had to come up with an explanation for the money, so we invented the lottery story, she said.
You sold your children? Sabrina cried. She had never heard a more horrible story in her entire life.
How could you?
He manipulated us, Mrs. Arachnid sobbed. I know you don't understand, but when we gave him the babies, it was like we weren't in control of ourselves. We were so desperate, so full of despair. It was like he crawled into our brains and rewired them, so we really believed it was the best thing we could do.
No, I don't understand, Sabrina shouted. You filthy ever-afters are nothing but animals. You would hand your children over to a monster so you could cover yourselves in jewels and furs?
Mrs. Arachnid looked down at her sparkling necklace and started to cry.
Sabrina, Granny said, that's enough.
I agree, Daphne said. Take a chill pill. Sabrina ignored them.
No wonder Wilhelm trapped you in this town. All of you belong in a cage.
Sabrina Grimm, you will hold your tongue this instant, Granny Relda ordered.
You got yelled at, Puck taunted.
Puck! That goes for you as well.
Sabrina was stunned. The old woman had never raised her voice to her. The girl's face was hot with embarrassment.
If we showed you photos of all the children at the school, do you think you could pick out which ones might be yours in their human disguise?
The sheriff asked, picking up the Ferryport Landing Elementary School yearbook that was sitting on his desk.
I don't think so, Ernest,
Beauty said, trying to control her sobbing.
We haven't seen them since they were a day old. We didn't even get to name them.
Well, we will do the best we can to reunite you with them,
Granny Relda said.
You would do that for us? The beast asked.
Of course, Daphne said proudly. We are Grimms, and this is what we do.
Do you need anything from me? Hampstead said.
Granny shook her head and flashed Sabrina an angry look.
Actually, can I have a police hat?
Daphne asked the sheriff. Hampstead smiled and nodded at the girl.
You are so punk rock, she cried.
Once the family was outside, Sabrina wasn't sure which was colder, the bitter winter air or Granny's attitude toward her. She also knew that Daphne was going to give her the silent treatment again, but it didn't matter to her anymore.
I'm not sorry for what I said.
Oh, we're well aware of that, Granny Relda said as they approached the car.
Mr. Canis was waiting on the roof.
I heard yelling, he said, crawling down to help the old woman into the front seat.
I bet you're going to hear a lot more, Puck said, sounding hopeful.
Everything is fine, the old woman said. It is late, and I think we all need a good night of rest.
Good idea, Daphne said. We can search the tunnels tomorrow.
No, I don't think so, Granny said, as they got settled into the car. Things have escalated to a point where I don't feel comfortable having the three of you help out. A few ever-after children are one thing, but the Rumpelstiltskin is another entirely. He may be behind these murders, and he's one of the most deranged and mysterious fairy tale creatures that ever came to Ferryport Landing. I can't put you into harm's way when I have no idea what to expect.
This isn't about danger, Sabrina said, shaking with anger and hurt. We've been in plenty of dangerous situations since we moved to this town. This is about me, isn't it?
Granny Relda turned in her seat and eyed the girl.
In the past, I thought you two girls were smart enough to handle yourselves. I thought you might possibly be the cleverest Grimms in the history of the family. But right now, I don't trust your judgment, Sabrina. You're not who I thought you were, child. I'm sorry, but this case is closed for the Sisters Grimm.
Everyone was furious with her, so Sabrina had crept upstairs to her room rather than hear another lecture. As she lay in bed looking up at the model airplanes her father had hung from the ceiling, she thought there might be an upside to being the black sheep of the family. While everyone was busy solving mysteries, she could spend more time searching for her parents. Just 2 days ago, she would have thought this was a perfect chance. But now, with Granny acting so blind to the truth about the town's residents, she worried the old woman would be their next victim. If that happened, the girls would get sent back to the orphanage, and any chance of finding their mom and dad would be gone. Daphne entered the room, dressed in her pajamas, and sat down on the edge of the bed.
"Well, we now know what Granny's like when she's mad," she said. "She's downstairs cleaning the house. She's been dusting for the last hour. If you get her any madder, she's going to clean out the closets."
"I didn't mean to make her angry," Sabrina said.
"You've got to get over this thing you have about ever-afters," Daphne said.
Sabrina groaned. If Daphne was going to lecture her, she'd be happy to go back to receiving the silent treatment.
"No, what I've got to do is convince everyone to stop being so naive," Sabrina said. "But let's just say I'm wrong about everything. Punishing us for my attitude isn't going to help solve the case. Granny can't do it all, and she's not going to get any help from Charming and the sheriff. We could be searching the tunnels. Who knows how far they've dug, or even what they're digging for. Maybe there's some kind of monster under the town. I know that sounds nuts, but we used to think the same thing about giants not so long ago. What if the bad guys are doing something really bad down there while Granny is running around trying to find out which of the kids at school are monsters?
So what do we do?"
"We do what we're supposed to do," Sabrina said. "We're Grimms,
and something is wrong in this town. It's our job to find out what it is. Once she was confident her grandmother and Mr. Canis were asleep, Sabrina shook her sister awake, and the two of them crawled out of bed. They crept out of their room and down the hall to Puck's bedroom.
"Don't step on the plate,"
Sabrina reminded her sister as she opened the door. Inside the boys' magical forest room, the sun had set, replaced by a sea of stars, each blinking brightly just for Puck. The boxing kangaroo was asleep in his ring, and the roller coaster had been turned off. All was still except for the cascading waterfall splashing into the lagoon. The girls crept along the path around the lagoon, and then into some heavy brush. Eventually, they came to a trampoline on which Puck was sound asleep. The Trickster King was wearing a pair of baby blue footy pajamas that had little smiling stars and moons on them. Held close to his face was a soft pink stuffed unicorn with a rainbow sewn on its side. If only Sabrina had brought a camera, she could have also recorded his thumb in his mouth.
"Time to wake up the sleepy monkey," Sabrina cooed in baby talk, doing her best not to roar with laughter.
Daphne giggled but held her hand over her mouth.
"Wakey, wakey, eggs and bakey," Sabrina continued.
Puck stirred in his sleep but didn't wake. A big stream of drool escaped his mouth and ran down the front of his pajamas.
"Does someone have the sleepy sleepies?"
Daphne said, mimicking her sister's baby talk.
"Time to come back from dreamland, precious,"
the older girl said, shaking the boy roughly. Puck sprang from his sleep with wings extended from his back. He waved his big pink unicorn like a deadly sword and slashed at the children.
"Nice jammies," Daphne snickered.
"I especially like Mr. Unicorn," Sabrina laughed.
"His name is Craven the Deceiver," Puck corrected,
before realizing what he was holding and who was with him. He tossed the stuffed animal aside and fluttered down to the ground.
"We've got a plan for tomorrow, and you're going to help us,"
Sabrina said.
"Forget it," the boy answered.
"Tomorrow I'm telling the old lady to find another bodyguard for her stinky offspring. It's beneath me."
"But this plan requires a lot of mischief,"
Sabrina said. Puck's eyes lit up.
"I'm listening," he said. "We're going to get into the boiler room tomorrow to search the tunnels."
"The old lady will be furious."
"I know, but I'm willing to take the heat if it saves someone's life."
"Fine. What's the plan?" Sabrina reached into her pocket and took out her set of keys.
"Where'd you get those?" Daphne asked.
"I've been swiping them off Granny's key ring one by one and making copies at the hardware store."
Puck's eyes lit up, and he looked at Sabrina as if he had never seen her before in his life.
"You stole those keys and made copies?"
She dropped her eyes.
"Yeah," she said, thinking she felt disapproval.
"That's wonderful," the boy said, eyeing the girl like a child watching a fireworks display.
He was in complete awe of her. He grabbed both the girls by the wrist and dragged them through his room.
"Let's put them to use, then."
Once they were in Mirror's room, the three children stepped through the reflection and came out into the Hall of Wonders. Mirror was standing in front of his own full-length mirror, sucking in his plump belly and making muscle poses like a bodybuilder.
"Doesn't anyone in this house sleep anymore?" he asked.
"We need some help," Sabrina said.
The little man rolled his eyes and let out his belly.
"Very well. What's the scoop?"
"We need something that will help us get into the boiler room at school," Daphne said. "The door is locked, so we need something that will turn us invisible or let us walk through walls."
"Children, this isn't Walmart," Mirror replied. "I don't have everything, but there is something that might help. Follow me."
As they followed Mirror down the long hallway, Sabrina read the golden plaques on each of the doors, a favorite habit developed on previous visits. Leprechaun gold, floor plans for gingerbread houses, talking fish, ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future, tick-tock men, Caliban. The doors went on and on. What was Mirror going to offer them? Soon, he stopped at a door with a plaque that read, "The Pantry." He held out his hand and Sabrina gave him her key ring. He searched through her collection and found the one that unlocked the door. Everyone stepped inside where, much to the girl's chagrin, there stood an old, run-down refrigerator.
"I've never heard of the magic refrigerator," Daphne said. "Is that a Grimm story or someone else?"
"There's no such thing as a magic refrigerator," Mirrors said as he opened the door. "It's what's inside that's important." He opened the fridge, bent down, and rummaged around inside. He pulled out a bag of rotten carrots. "I really have to toss these out," he mumbled. He opened a carton of milk and took a sniff, his face crinkling up in disgust as he closed the carton and put it back in the refrigerator. Finally, he took out a package of juice boxes and handed them to the kids.
"Drink me," Daphne read. "This is from Alice's Adventures in Wonderland," Sabrina said happily. "This will make us shrink?"
"To about the size of an ant," Mirrors said. "At that size, you could just walk under the door and get into any room you want. But you'll need these, too." He reached in and pulled out several individually wrapped snack cakes. They looked just like the kind Sabrina used to buy at the deli near their Manhattan apartment. But the label said, "Eat me." "These will make you big, but don't eat too many. They're not exactly Atkins-friendly," Mirror warned. "Tweedledee and Tweedledum sold these for a week at their convenience store before your grandmother confiscated their stock. The town was filled with giant children. It took us a week to sort it out."
"We'll need four of each, I think," Sabrina said. "But there's only three of us," Daphne argued.
"I have a feeling the great detective Wendell Hamlin is going to change his mind about being a loner," her sister replied.
The next day at school, the trio walked down the crowded hallway toward the boiler room. Sabrina scrutinized every kid along the way. Any one of them could be a giant spider or a frog girl, but besides being exhausted, they all looked just like every other kid Sabrina had ever seen. At least her suspicions about Wendell proved correct. He was waiting for them by the doorway with a handkerchief and a runny nose.
"I've been doing some thinking, and I believe that joining forces might be a great idea, but under a couple of conditions," he said, rushing to join the group.
"What conditions?" Sabrina said.
"I handle all the dangerous work," the chubby boy said,
puffing up his chest like a tough guy. The children looked at one another and fought off a laugh.
"Fine," Sabrina said. "I think we should have a look in the tunnels right away."
"I agree, but there is a problem," Wendell said, wiping his nose again. "They changed the locks on the boiler room door."
Sabrina reached into her backpack and tossed the boy an eat-me cake and a drink-me juice box.
"What are these?" he asked.
"The key to the new lock."
"You want to do it now?" Daphne cried. "Ms. White will notice I'm gone and come looking for me."
"We'll worry about that later," said her sister. "Lunchtime is too busy, and the bad guys will probably be watching after school. We'll wait until the bell rings for class, and once the hall is empty, we'll get started."
Soon enough, the bell rang, and the kids filed into their classes. Sabrina, Daphne, Puck, and Wendell milled around, trying to appear as if they were on their way to class, without actually going anywhere. Once they were alone in the hall, the children took out their drink-me boxes and inserted the handy straws attached to the sides.
"How much do we drink?" Daphne asked, sniffing at the box.
"I don't know," Sabrina said. "I guess until it starts working."
Puck took a long slurp, and when he was finished, he opened his mouth and belched.
"It's fruity," he exclaimed.
Suddenly, to a sound like that of a squeaky balloon losing its air, his body shrank to half its size. Even his clothes, the eat-me cake, and the juice box got tiny.
"Drink more," Daphne insisted. "You aren't small enough to get under the door."
"And hurry up," Sabrina said, scanning the hallway. The last thing she wanted was a teacher or student to see this craziness.
Puck took another sip and shrank even further. Soon he was no taller than a quarter standing on its end. Sabrina bent down and examined the tiny boy.
"You have no idea how tempted I am to squish you,"
she said.
And you have no idea how big your nose hairs are, he squeaked.
Sabrina covered her face with her hand.
Our turn, Daphne said.
The three other children took big sips out of their boxes, and in no time they were all shrinking, too. The liquid did taste fruity, like pineapples and cherry pie at the same time. A cool tingle ran down Sabrina's throat, into her belly, and then into her legs and arms. The sensation wasn't unlike having a good stretch after a wonderful night's sleep. When she finished the box, she was the same size as Puck.
Let's get in there before we wind up on the bottom of someone's shoe, said the tiny Wendell.
He marched over to the door and looked back.
I'll go first, in case there's something waiting for us on the other side.
He yanked out his hanky, blew hard on it, then shoved it back into his pocket. Then he walked underneath the door without even having to bend over. Daphne took Sabrina's hand, and together they followed Wendell, with Puck bringing up the rear.
I should be doing the dangerous stuff, he grumbled.
Once the group was on the other side, the children had a chance to look around. A bucketful of mops sat in the corner, boxes of trash bags and rolls of toilet paper filled a nearby shelf, and an ancient coal furnace rested in the center of the room. Not far off, a brand new electric furnace clicked and popped as it pushed warm air throughout the vents of the school. But what was bewildering was how gigantic everything was. The mops looked as tall as the Empire State Building in Midtown New York City, and Sabrina suspected if one of the rolls of toilet paper were to fall off the shelf and onto them, they'd be crushed to death.
Look at that table, Daphne cried, pointing at a nearby desk. It's huge.
Sabrina nodded in agreement.
Look at that chair, Daphne said. It's huge.
Sabrina agreed.
Look at that button, Daphne said, running over to a monstrous white button that had fallen off of someone's shirt.
She tried to lift it, but it was too heavy for her in her shrunken state.
It's huge!
We need to find you another word, Sabrina muttered.
Hey, I'm 7. I don't know a lot of words, the little girl said.
All right, Piggy, Puck said to Wendell. Where's the entrance to the tunnel?
We need to eat the cakes and get big, the boy detective said. The lever that opens the entrance is in the old furnace.
The children reached in their pockets for their eat-me cakes when suddenly the boiler room door opened.
Someone's coming, Sabrina shouted.
The door closed and a man walked over to the coal furnace. He opened a small trap door on its side and reached in. Sabrina guessed he had pushed the lever because a hum filled the room and the coal furnace began to slide across the floor. That's when Sabrina noticed it was Principal Hamlin. The principal waited patiently, and when the coal furnace had slid away, he descended a flight of stairs hidden underneath the machine. The children rushed to the center of the room.
That was your dad, Sabrina said to Wendell.
What is he doing? He said.
We have to follow him, Daphne insisted. We can't. If we eat the cakes and get big, he's sure to spot us. But at this size, we'll never make it down those steps, her sister argued.
No worries, girls. I have a brilliant plan, Puck said proudly. He spun around on his heels and transformed into an elephant, albeit a tiny elephant. He let out a mighty roar and charged off into the far corner of the room.
Puck, we don't have time for your stupidity, Sabrina shouted after him.
But the boy elephant did not respond. Soon she could hear the scraping of metal on the floor. When Elephant Puck returned, he was pushing a dustpan with his massive head all the way to the edge of the steps. When the pan was on the edge of the top step, the elephant morphed back into the boy.
Get in, he said, beaming with pride.
Sabrina looked at the dustpan hanging precariously over the edge.
No way, she said. We'll kill ourselves in that thing.
Daphne was already climbing inside and had found a spot in the corner to sit down.
We survived Granny's driving, she said. We'll survive this, too.
You'll be fine, Puck assured Sabrina. You'll probably need someone to feed you for the rest of your life, but you'll make it. Stop being a baby and get in. Sabrina looked at Wendell. He shrugged, and the two of them climbed into the dustpan.
You all need to stay in the back of this thing, Puck explained.
Oh,
And one more thing?
What? Sabrina cried. She didn't like the tone of his voice.
Buckle up, kiddies!
Puck shouted as he walked to the front of the pan and leaped into the air. His body came down hard on the end of the pan, and the back tilted high in the air, sending the whole thing rocketing down the steps before Sabrina could even scream. Each step it cleared just made the dustpan increase its speed, until finally they crashed at the bottom of the stairs. After Sabrina checked everyone for broken bones, she punched Puck in the arm.
"Hey, I got us here, didn't I?" he complained as he rubbed his sore shoulder.
The children climbed out of the dustpan, calmed themselves, and headed down a long, cavernous hall carved out of stone. Along the rocky path were pickaxes and dusty shovels, old buckets, and miles of rope.
"What are they up to down here?" Sabrina wondered, as everyone marched through the tunnel.
The journey wouldn't have taken long if they were their usual size, but the length of a normal step now required a dozen.
"This is as far as I went before?" Wendell said, when they reached a place where the tunnels branched off into two directions. "Which way should we go?"
Sabrina heard voices arguing in the tunnel to the left.
"There's someone else down here besides your father," she said. "Let's go find out who."
The children followed the tunnel to the left, turned a corner, and crept as close as they could to the two men arguing in the dark. Sabrina couldn't make out the other person's face, but Hamlin was one of them for sure. The principal was wringing his hands.
"I'm telling you again, this has gone too far. No one was supposed to die," Hamlin said.
"Piper, you worry too much," a creaky voice said.
To Sabrina, it sounded like the voice of a man who had been alive 1,000 years without drinking a single sip of water.
"Tonight, we're going to reach our goal. We would already be there if it weren't for last night."
"My son was missing," Hamlin cried. "What was I supposed to do?"
"Of all people, I understand," the voice crackled. "After all, I'm a father, too. The difference is that my children understand how important this is, while your child just gets in the way and puts this all at risk."
"Don't threaten me," the principal growled. "My boy isn't going to ruin our plans."
"Then we understand each other," the voice said. "Tonight, we'll push forward, if you can find the time."
Hamlin's voice was so angry it was shaking.
"Don't question my dedication. This was my idea, after all."
"I'm glad to see you still remember that."
Hamlin spun around and rushed back up the tunnel, narrowly missing stepping on his own son, who just managed to leap out of the way.
"Are you okay?"
Daphne asked, taking Wendell's hand in her own.
"I can't believe it," the boy said.
"We should go farther into the tunnel," Sabrina suggested. "We need to know where they are digging to."
Everyone agreed. But just then, something crawled out from around a corner and stopped the group in their tracks. An enormous brown mouse, as big as a semi-truck, lumbered toward them. The rodent's pink nose and whiskers flicked and twitched as it sniffed at the children. Sabrina knew that at their current size, they'd make a great snack for the hungry mouse.
"Eat the cakes," Sabrina advised, eyeing the mouse.
The children unwrapped their cakes and were just about to eat them when the mouse barreled forward and knocked Sabrina down. Daphne screamed, and Puck leaped forward and dragged Sabrina to her feet. Unfortunately, she had dropped her cake right in front of the beast. The mouse spotted it, sniffed it, and with a quick flick of its tongue, ate it.
"That was a bad thing, wasn't it?"
Sabrina said sheepishly.
"Oh, man," Puck said, quickly shoving his own little chocolate cake into his mouth. "This is going to be awesome."
Daphne and Wendell were already munching their cakes, too, when Puck offered Sabrina his pinky.
"Hang on, Sabrina," Puck said, flashing his devilish grin. "This is about to get interesting."
Sabrina grabbed his pinky finger and held it tightly, just as the first changes affected the mouse's body. It sounded as if someone were blowing up a balloon. A ripple rolled across the mouse's skin, and its eyes widened as its body inflated by 1,000 times. Yet its little legs and head stayed the exact same size, causing its massive body to plop to the ground. This was followed by a loud, squeaky rubber sound as the rodent's feet, legs, and head expanded in size. The children dashed down the tunnel to avoid the quickly expanding mouse. Puck, meanwhile, was growing in the same awkward manner. His legs got big first, pushing him to his normal height and sending Sabrina soaring high into the air. When his upper body and hands finally followed, his pinky got thicker. Sabrina held on with all her might. Luckily, Puck was paying attention. He quickly swung her into his shirt pocket, where she clung to the top, just as Puck's head inflated. Meanwhile, Daphne's head and feet were the first to inflate, and the not-so-little girl hobbled around like a pumpkin that had suddenly sprouted shoes and was making an escape from the patch.
"I don't like this at all," she groaned.
No sooner had she complained than her legs sprouted up like over-eager corn stalks, followed by her upper body and, lastly, her neck. Wendell experienced the same kind of disturbing growth.
"It's all good,"
the runny-nosed detective announced, checking for all 10 fingers. But what he didn't see was that it wasn't all good. The mouse was also getting bigger and bigger until it was nearly as wide as the tunnel, and worse, it seemed very, very angry. Puck grabbed Daphne and Daphne grabbed Wendell, and they all rushed down the tunnel and up the stairs. When they got to the top, Daphne and Wendell raced across the room to the door, unlocked it, and hurried into the hall. Puck followed close behind, giggling like an idiot.
"Do you laugh every time we're in trouble?"
Sabrina shouted. The boy looked down into his pocket.
"What are you squeaking about?"
When he was safely in the hall, Puck slammed the door shut, and the children leaned against the walls on either side to catch their breath.
"I don't think we have to worry about him anymore," Puck said.
Just then, the door flew off its hinges, slammed against the opposite wall, and fell heavily to the floor. The giant mouse lumbered into the hallway and roared angrily. It was as big as a stuffed buffalo Sabrina had seen at the Natural History Museum. It let out a deafening squeak and licked its gigantic front teeth. To make matters worse, the dismissal bell rang and every classroom door opened. The hallway was immediately flooded with a sea of noisy children, eager to get to their next class. The mouse stomped hard, creating a chasm in the shiny floor, and all conversation ended abruptly.
"Well, Piglet, you wanted to do the dangerous stuff," Puck laughed as he turned to a stunned Wendell. "Be my guest."